for the Middle East.
The Saudi regime is considered one of the most despotic regimes in the West Asia region, which routinely violates the rights of dissidents. It has engaged in a brutal war against Yemen, which has killed thousands of people, including countless women and children.
U.S. President Joe Biden visited Israel to once again express Washington's unconditional support for the Israeli regime. This is his first trip to the region since taking office. Biden's visit to Israel follows the collapse of a coalition-led regime headed by Naftali Bennett. Biden opened his visit by offering anxious Israeli leaders strong reassurances of his determination to stop Iran's nuclear energy program, saying he'd be willing to use force as a last resort. He said it would not remove Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps from the U.S. list of so-called terrorist organizations, even if that meant wrecking the Iranian nuclear deal for good. Biden and Israel's Prime Minister Lapid have signed a so-called security declaration affirming their united front against Iran.
So I would not qualify this joint declaration as anything but some kind of posturing. Joe Biden, as any U.S. president before him since 1967, has basically been beholden to Zionist interest, and he cannot hold any kind of discourse which deviates from this notion that Israeli national interest and U.S. national interest are one and the same.
Biden made reviving the Iran nuclear deal, brokered by Barack Obama in 2015 and abandoned by Donald Trump in 2018, a key priority as he entered office. Biden said Trump made a gigantic mistake by withdrawing the U.S. from the Iran nuclear deal. But talks for the U.S. to re-enter the deal have stalled as Biden has stuck to his predecessor's tactics, piling up on the sanctions and refraining from giving guarantees that Washington would not abandon the deal again.
Despite all measures of good faith and all efforts and all kind of flexibility from the Republic, the Islamic Republic of Iran, the United States under Joe Biden has not only maintained the maximum pressure doctrine sanction regime installed by Trump, but has failed to lift the sanctions that were the object of negotiation back in 2015. And should I say, has gone out of its way to show really bad intent in the context of the negotiation.
Joe Biden has vowed to boost Washington's military support for Tel Aviv. Iran says U.S. President Joe Biden's visit to the Middle East will not bring security for the occupying regime. President Ebrahim Raisi said if the visits by American officials to the region are intended to reinforce the Zionist regime's position and provide impetus to the normalization process, the efforts are bound to fail. Tehran has also slammed the U.S. for keeping up unconditional support for Israel. Biden is also following up on Washington's agenda of enabling normalization between Arab states and Israel, which is aimed at pushing the Palestinian cause to the sidelines. Upon disembarking from U.S. Air Force One, which arrived at Ben-Gurion Airport, Biden said he did not think a Palestinian state was likely to happen in the near future. Just as Biden was visiting Israel, the regime's military bulldozers began plowing lands belonging to four Palestinian villages between Ramallah and Nablus. Israeli settlements in the West Bank, which house more than 600,000 settlers, are viewed by Palestinians as a major obstacle to their future state and lasting peace between Jews and Palestinians. Israeli rights group B'Tselem says the U.S. government should be held accountable for the Israeli regime's violations. Leader of Lebanon's resistance movement, Said Hassan Nasrallah, said a lot of hope and illusions are built around this visit. But the United States of today is not the same as it was in 2003 and 2006. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas stated that Biden's remark upon arrival in Tel Aviv emphasizes support for the Israeli regime.
The Israeli, on the other hand, are desperate to enroll Arab states, and Saudi Arabia is the master prize, which is why we've seen all this courtship going on. Mostly on at the behest of Tel Aviv, trying to lure the crown prince to sign some kind of alliance. And in this respect, this joint declaration, as Joe Biden sets out to visit the officially the GCC, but let's not make any mistake about it, to meet Mohammed bin Salman on the sideline of this forum, is aimed at trying to tell him that his interest, his security interest, lies with Tel Aviv. This remains to be seen.
It's now widely believed that Biden's much-hyped visit to Israel and Saudi Arabia is doomed to fail and will not bring any substantial change to the realities of the region.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaam alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome to another show of Youth Station. We're here again. And since you've boarded the train, there's no choice because that's the only station that we have. There's no getting off. Welcome, and we will not be serving any feasts on this ride except for food for thought.
Yes, yeah. There's another person in here. This is Asma.
Welcome,
yes,
welcome.
Yeah, thank you for noticing me.
Yeah, thank you for welcoming me. Right.
Yes.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Well, that's a thought in itself. Are you all right?
Well, it's
are
a never-ending
sure?
question.
Yeah,
that's a $1 million question.
Yeah, I think that's undervaluing the question.
Yes.
When you say it's a $1 million question. And because there are people...
Yes.
I was watching a documentary on... Well, I'm not going to promote that channel, but it was about a certain safe haven... Mm-hmm. For millionaires or billionaires who are depressed or they're addicted to drugs, certain
wow.
A-class drugs,
yeah.
Right? And these people come to those places, either they're depressed or they're addicted mm-hmm. to certain drugs, right? Well, when you've got too much money and there's no God in your life, then the only thing you have is drugs.
That's the
right?
point.
You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So these people go to these places, they try to treat them, they try to cure them with certain... medical, psychiatric, you know...
Or
processes.
Meditations,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah. And they've made this area that's blocked out and is completely... They cut off from the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they pay as much as $10 million for certain
oh, wow.
weeks. For weeks.
For weeks.
Right? And that course or that therapy, if
yeah.
you may, is 6 months, right?
Yeah.
And they pay $10 million, if I'm not mistaken, per
that's
week.
That's a huge number of money.
Right. What happens to you that you did struggle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Besides those people who've inherited this kind of wealth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those people who are self-made, they've struggled, after all, right?
Yeah.
To reach a place in the society that they are named and tagged and called as what? Billionaires. Or millionaires,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But what happened? Where did they miss out? Because if you are a hardworking person, you do have a schedule, right? You
yeah,
have
of course.
You have a certain...
A plan for your life.
Yeah, precisely,
mm-hmm.
right? You're persistent. All these positive traits that you have to reach that place, right?
Yeah.
You had all those. What went wrong? What do you think?
Well, I think you mentioned it at the very beginning of your speech. I guess it is because when you do not have God in your life and there is no spiritual aspect in your life, then you would lose the meaning of every single thing that you have been attached to. You know, we could actually relate, because sometimes you get to a point where you see no much of meaning in life. Mm-hmm. But then because you have this spiritual link to God, and then you have this concept of the hereafter, and then you come to think that, okay, life is short and it's not going to last forever.
Yeah, YOLO, you know, one of those you only live once philosophy.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that it happens and it's very relatable. I guess the main reason is behind this very fact that when God is missing in your life, then you would lose the track of your life.
Yeah, but is that for sure? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many people, right, they don't believe in a God. And you know what? They're all right. They're not depressed.
Well, you know, exceptions do not break the rule.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's okay. For sure.
All right. But what do these exceptions have, or that has stopped them from breaking down?
Well, still, they have perhaps ambitions in life.
Right. Something that they haven't
achieved.
A
driving force. Mm-hmm. Something that still has not been dead inside them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say so.
Yeah, that's a theory. And all we have is theories, right?
Of course. Yeah. And based on personal ideas, we're just talking. It's not something that is like a gospel truth or something.
Yeah, it's not like, yeah, carved on stone. It's just something that we speculate.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a break from talking.
Spiritual migration. What do you say about that?
Yeah, people who choose to leave that state they're already in are choosing to move mentally, right?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Choosing to move spiritually. Where they are, they're not comfortable. They want to move. They want to change where they are, right?
Yes.
Mentally, spiritually, wherever they are. So it does exist. Certain people might move.
But do you
move.
Think it would work?
What would?
Migrating from one habit to another.
One habit to another. As long as you find out what's causing you to be inhabituated to that certain thing, it might be helpful. If you just want to replace a certain thing with another just as bad, then you might
You're
just
not doing
stick
a
to the
very
first thing. Right?
Job. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no progress, there's no growth. Right.
So I guess as human beings, we're doing that on a daily basis. What do you say?
Certain people do, certain people don't. For example, you're never static. You always move.
That's
right?
It, yeah.
Either you're growing or
we're
you're falling
characters.
Down.
Yeah,
either you're inclining or you're reclining. But there is movement.
Uh-huh.
Nothing is still. Not my personality, not your personality.
Yes.
Nothing in this world is still, right? Yeah, even a table, for example. Yeah, I do see it as something, an object that is still, but it in itself has a movement, right?
Now, since we are talking to the youth, I would love to just share some ideas upon the fact how to move spiritually, migrate, as we were just talking about migration, how to spiritually migrate from one bad habit into
another bad habit.
No, actually, a better one, of course. We talked about it.
A better bad habit.
No, a better habit.
A better.
Of course.
All right. Relatively
because we
habit.
Want to achieve salvation, so we don't have a better bad habit. We have just good habits.
The first thing that comes to my mind
is
that you need to pay attention to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean about... Right. You know, you observe people outside and you see, what the hell is this guy thinking? Certain people do certain things and you're like, what is this guy thinking? What's going on in his head, right?
Mm-hmm.
This what's going on in his head, if we apply that for ourselves, what is going on in my head?
Yeah, that's
right?
Very true.
Yeah. So we need to observe our thought process as an outsider.
Yeah.
As an outsider. Observe why I'm doing this and where I'm headed.
Yeah, and also, you know, I would mention another thing as well. Well, even in the Holy Book of Quran, we have that God has said that those who would migrate from one country into another, for they have been expelled from it. Or if we put it into some modern phrase, I would say, for some reasons, like they're living in a country that is not going to let their children grow in a healthy environment, they would move their country into another. This is also could be considered a sort of spiritual migration, wouldn't it?
It is actual migration, right?
Mm-hmm. But the reason people, behind it is
yeah, precisely.
Actually,
for those people to actually take a step and physically move, they had to undergo that spiritual movement before they actually, right, look, you'd never do something without thinking, right?
Of course.
You might consciously not think about it, but like when you pick up a glass of coffee and you sip, you drink, your mind, your brain went through that before your body did.
Yes.
The rest of your body, right?
Yeah.
Similarly, if you're leaving a country, if you're leaving a city, going to another place, you had something going on in your head in the first place.
Yes.
Right? Within yourself, there was something that was going on.
Yeah.
Which is why you decided to actually carry it out.
So I'm with you up to the point that you're talking about the thinking process. Yes, it's true that all the migrations start with thinking.
Right.
But the thing I was saying was that sometimes a spiritual migration also leads to actual migration.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly, I'm sort of agreeing with you here.
Because not Why? All of those people who migrate are doing that for a spiritual reason.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's spiritual migration, and then there's migration for spirituality, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, first you have to undergo spiritual migration in order to carry out a migration for your spirituality, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you went through a certain change. What causes this change? That's the question. What causes you to change the way you think, change the way you see the world? What causes that? What do you think?
Well, just perfection, I would say.
Perfection.
Yes. The idealistic aspect of life, in which is very much heightened in some people, more than the others, would lead them into thinking to change the situation they already are in.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
We are talking to the youth who are living in this time, which is very much looking like everything is haphazardly put together.
They don't find satisfaction. That was so deep.
Wow.
That was so deep.
Shall you please elaborate more on that?
Thing is, they don't find satisfaction. What happens is they move on one thing, from one thing to another, to another, to another, until they find this spark. You're a human being, and every human being wants perfection. There is no human being on this planet that does not want perfection.
Exactly.
Right?
They seek to improve themselves.
Right. This person had tried all sorts of stuff. To find what? This little spark of peace.
So I guess what you are meaning is that when we wish to go through a spiritual migration, this thing happens that a moment of manifestation would occur to us, and then we go into a deep thinking, and then we try to change the situation.
Yeah, something might trigger that moment.
Yeah.
Something starts that, you know, that thought, right?
Yeah.
Keep moving on. And they realize that these are the things that cause that satisfaction, that bring that peace that they were always looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be one thought, it could be one observation, it could be one action.
A quote, perhaps you hear a quote from a person, you read it somewhere and
exactly.
It would have some effects
Open
on
your
you.
Eyes. Yep.
And then that would go through a spiritual journey.
Yep.
So thank you, dear listeners, for staying around. This was all the time that we had for today's discussion. Thank you for choosing us. Until another session, I bid you farewell.
If you did not choose us, you better choose us.
Yes, there's no other way for you. And I will leave you to the never slipping eyes of God.
I have what I have. My love is strong because of you. In weakness, I am braver. My defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Inspector General for the Department of Homeland Security said that though the U.S. Secret Service opted to have its office do a review of the agency's response to the January 6th Capitol attack in lieu of conducting after-action reports, it then stonewalled the review by slow-walking production of materials. We have prepared for you an article written by Hugo Lowell under the heading U.S. Panel is told Secret Service's January 6 text messages story has shifted several times. Inspector General for the Department of Homeland Security told the House January 6 Select Committee at a briefing on Friday 15th of July that the Secret Service's account about how text messages from that day, from the day before and the day of the Capitol attack were erased, has shifted several times. The Inspector General told the panel at one point the explanation from the Secret Service for the lost text was because of software upgrades, while at another point, the explanation was because of device replacements. The Inspector General also said that though the Secret Service opted to have his office do a review of the agency's response to the Capitol attack in lieu of conducting after-action reports, it then stonewalled the review by slow-walking production of materials. After the Inspector General raised his complaints, he then discussed the feasibility of reconstructing the text. But according to participants at the briefing, the issue so alarmed the Select Committee that the panel moved hours later to subpoena the Secret Service. The string of fast-paced developments on Capitol Hill reflected how the erasure of the Secret Service text, first disclosed in a letter to Congress by the Inspector General, Joseph Kufari, has become a top priority for the congressional inquiry into the January 6th Capitol attack. The circumstances surrounding the erasure of the Secret Service texts from the day before and the day of the Capitol attack have become central for the Select Committee as it investigates how it planned to move Donald Trump and Mike Pence as the violence unfolded. According to the panel, the texts are potentially significant for investigators as the Secret Service played a crucial role in preventing Donald Trump from going to the Capitol on that day and wanted to remove the then-Vice President Mike Pence from the complex. In the letter, the Inspector General said that certain Secret Service texts from 5th of January and 6th of January 2021 were erased amid a device replacement program, even after he had requested the messages for his internal inquiry. The Secret Service has disputed that, saying in a statement that data on some phones were lost as part of a pre-planned system migration in January of 2021, and that Kofari's initial request for communications came weeks later in late February 2021. But the participants said the Select Committee questioned the Secret Service's emphasis on that date and noted in the subpoena letter that the request for electronic communications in fact first came from Congress 10 days after the Capitol attack. The congressional request from 16th of January 2021, addressed to multiple executive branch agencies, including the Homeland Security Department, which oversees the Secret Service, was for all materials referring or relating to the riot. The participants said members on the Select Committee were privately skeptical of the notion that the Secret Service managed to inadvertently erase key messages during a 10-day period that was among perhaps the most tumultuous for the agency. One of the Select Committee's members added on Friday, 15th of July, if some of the texts were deliberately erased after the 16th of January 2021 request, that could amount to obstruction of a congressional investigation. A spokesperson for the Secret Service could not immediately be reached for comment. The House Select Committee has spent recent days trying to establish whether it was all texts from 5th of January and 6th of January 2021 that were lost, or just some of the texts, exactly how the texts came to be erased, and whether additional days' worth of texts from that month were missing. The participants at the briefing said Kofari was not able to provide clear answers on those questions, beyond the fact that he understood a proportion of texts from both the day before and the day of the Capitol attack remain unaccounted for. The participants said the unanswered questions were because of a lack of transparency from the Secret Service. At the briefing, Kofari said the explanation for the lost text shifted from software upgrades to device upgrades to still other issues. According to the participants, Kofari also expressed optimism to the House Select Committee that the erased text could be reconstructed through previous backups of messages or tools available to federal law enforcement. The Justice Department Inspector General has previously been able to retrieve lost texts using forensic tools in 2018 to recover messages from two senior FBI officials who investigated former presidential nominee Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and exchanged notes criticizing the latter. The controversy over the erased Secret Service text erupted on Wednesday, 13th of July, after Kofari's letter became public and the House Select Committee went into overdrive to assess the impact on its investigation. That prompted the House Select Committee Chairman, Benny Thompson, to discuss the matter with the panel's staff director, David Buckley, and his deputy, Kristen Ameling, and later with the full House Select Committee, which asked Kufari to provide a closed-door briefing.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Dear listeners, welcome to A to Z. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. In today's lesson, we will talk about principles of friendship. And today, we will talk about how to be a successful friend. Since the early childhood stage, and even before the child starts learning how to talk, he starts to incline and interact with other children around him at home. He plays and competes with them with anything their hand or which is at their disposal. Now, this early inclination and association with others is man's nature towards others. And this inclination shows the social instinct in man's nature. Now, because man was created with Allah's wisdom to live in human society, thus the incentive instinct in man and the psychological feeling of living with others forces the man towards friendships and relationships with others. It is in view of this that man feels depression and sadness whenever he is alone, without a companion. This is not the only matter, because a man always needs others, and others always need him. In general, a man cannot survive on his own socially. A man needs someone to be with. A man needs a friend. A man needs someone he can listen to and someone who he can listen also. That way, it completes both sides of the man and the other guys.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to A to Z program from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the principles of friendship. And we are talking about the principles of friendship by analyzing how to be a successful friend. What are the essentials of one to be a successful friend? So we say that a man is created to be a friend of others, and that a man cannot survive just on himself. He needs someone else socially to survive in this world. So it is through friendship and association, as well as exchanging views and opinions, that complete the humanity of a man, his efforts and his psychological as well as material needs. The Holy Quran explains this reality in saying, A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim, and this is in chapter 49, verse number 13. O mankind, surely we have created you from a male and a female, and made you tribes and families, that you may know each other. Surely the noblest of you with Allah is the most dutiful of you. This means that human life is friendship. The life of a man needs friendship, love, and assistance. There is no good for someone who repels people without befriending them. There's no good in being alone. And no doubt, this type of bad habit and isolating yourself from people shows the feeling of insufficiency on the side of that same person and lack of confidence in himself. So, an open and social person who creates a social relation with others is a person who is self-confident and of good morals, because through such relationships, i.e. when he granted his love and confidence to others, as well as getting the same thing from them, all these build-ups make him feel happy and relieved. Till next episode, God bless you all, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
In the limelight.
Americans have a gun crazy culture, armed to the teeth, with some believing that they are the true patriots defending liberty against tyranny, says James Zogby, author, in an article published under the heading, "The U.S. is sick with guns." Stay tuned for more. It's difficult to find words that adequately describe feelings on first learning of the massacre of 19 children and 2 teachers in Texas recently. There was shock, fear, even nausea, and then disgust at the realization that this nightmare Americans have experienced too many times before was playing out again. As expected, the next day's papers were filled with graphs and charts showing how many mass shootings Americans have had in the United States of America, an average of 1 a day. How many school massacres Americans have had in the past few decades? Dozens. How many gun homicides? 50 a day. And how many guns are owned by American civilians? More than 400 million. Bottom line, Americans own more guns and have a higher per capita murder rate and mass casualty events annually by far than any other country on planet Earth. No matter how many times Americans are told this and how many outrages they endure, Americans know in their hearts that nothing will be done, and so they are resigned to live with fear, knowing the nightmare will return in their lives. Let's face it, the U.S. is a sick country. Their debate on gun violence can best be described as deranged and pathetic. Republicans and Democrats, fearful of getting in the crosshairs of the gun lobby, refuse to take any action. They refuse to allow even limited controls on guns, arguing that the unfettered right to own weapons is sacred. The solution to gun violence, they argue, is more guns. Having seen legislation to ban assault weapons or place limits on gun purchases routinely defeated, Democrats have either given up trying or being reduced to offering weak proposals. The result? Each new tragedy gives birth to short-lived horror, a bit of finger-pointing, a half-hearted attempt to pass some limited reforms, and then failure. The reality is deeper than policies or legislation. It's not just that American guns are too sophisticated or that they have too many of them. The root problem is the U.S. sick gun culture. U.S. generations grew up playing cowboys and Indians or cops and robbers. If they didn't have cap pistols or toy rifles, they simply improvised with a pointed finger, a thumb trigger, and po-po, you're dead. American generations do not play these games. Instead, they act out more fanciful tales of fantasy futuristic heroes, all possessing more potent weapons. But they will also make do, when needed, with sticks or fingers, morphing them into weapons possessed of all sorts of destructive powers. And the video games they play and movies they watch are largely based on killing, killing and killing, so much so that it has become normalized. From cradle to grave, Americans are fed a steady diet of guns and violence. From cartoons, westerners or cop shows to video games and Quentin Tarantino's Bullet and Blood Feast, guns and shooting and killing are ingrained into their deep culture. Like mom and apple pie, guns have become part of who Americans are as a nation. There is a scene in the film Noir called Classic Gone Crazy where Bart, the film's main character as a young boy, is starting into a store window. The object of his desire is a six-shooter. Unable to resist its call, he shatters the glass and attempts to steal the weapon, only to be arrested in the act. The next scene has Bart standing before a judge trying to explain his obsession with guns. He tells the court, "I feel good when I'm shooting them. I feel awful, good inside, like I'm somebody." Gone Crazy Bart's fixation with the weapon is pathological and it leads ultimately to his demise. When we see the look on the faces of gun enthusiasts lining up to make what they fear may be their last purchase before Democrats take their guns away, we think of Bart. When we watch them sensually cradling their assault weapons or zoned out at the shooting range, we think of Bart, knowing that nothing good can come of it. We know all this, and yet there continues to be a pathological obsession not only with owning weapons, but also with blocking any reasonable controls on their ownership. The modus operandi of this lobby is simple and direct. They allow no discussion, no compromise, no concessions, and no wavering or weakness. And they mask their deadly advocacy with the Constitution, arguing that what is at stake is the very survival of Americans' freedom. In the process, they further inflame the passions of their adherents. In the end, the U.S. has a gun-crazy culture, armed to the teeth with some believing that they are the true patriots defending liberty against tyranny. When we add to this mix all of the resentments and pressures that gave birth to the Tea Party and Trumpism, including a not-so-subtle appeal to race, Americans are left with a dangerous and volatile brew. They will have more angry debates. They may pass some weak and ineffective legislation, and then they will move on to another issue that will distract Americans until the next massacre occurs. And another one will occur, because until they have a prolonged and serious national discussion about their sick love affair with guns and purge themselves of this pathology, they will only be skirting around the edges of an issue that is killing American civilians.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of the speech delivered on December 17, 2008 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Eid al-Qadir. The emphasis that our magnanimous Imam Khomeini and many other prominent religious scholars have placed on the unity between religion and politics is in fact rooted in Islamic teachings, especially the great lesson that Ghadir taught us. This shows the importance of the issue. All the people who interpret Ghadir in this way, that is, all Shi'as and even many non-Shi'a Muslims who have a similar interpretation, many constantly pay attention to the fact that the issue of government is a critical issue and that it is a high priority in Islam. No one should be indifferent to the issue of government. The important role of governments in guiding or misleading nations is a historical reality. The fact that the Islamic Republic places so much emphasis on the appropriate management of the country in the constitution and elsewhere is all due to the strong emphasis that Islam has placed on this issue. This is a point that must not be ignored.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The fact that the Holy Prophet of Islam introduced Ali ibn Abi Talib as his successor in Ghadir al-Khum is another point that is closely related to the first point. What were the defining characteristics of Imam Ali's life both before and after this event? These characteristics can provide us with a yardstick. Moving on the path of righteousness and attaching great importance to Allah's satisfaction were the primary features of Imam Ali's life. No matter how much hardship and selflessness were required to continue this life, that was the most important feature of Imam Ali's life. From his childhood to the moment he was martyred, the commander of the faithful, alayhi salam, remained rock solid for the sake of Allah. He made wholehearted efforts and was never frustrated with his efforts for Allah. He tried to promote Islam when it was time to do so. He fought for Islam when it was time to fight. He was patient when patience was required. He assumed the leadership of his society when it was necessary for him to do so.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavet, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Mashhad, a tourist magnet in northeast Iran. Every year, some 30 million pilgrims from across the Muslim world travel to Mashhad to visit the holy shrine of Imam Reza, the 8th Shia Imam. But a few miles away from the shrine, there's a whole new world for tourists who would also like to enjoy natural resorts after a spiritual journey. Welcome to Kuh Sangi, a heaven at the heart of Mashhad, as described by this Iraqi family.
We come from Iraq. We visited the holy shrine of Imam Reza, and then I found about this amazing place called Kuh Sangi and came with my family to enjoy the scenery.
It's my second trip to Mashhad. The city offers you a whole traveling package that includes pilgrimage and recreation.
Kuh Sangi is one of a myriad of attractions in Mashhad. Natural resorts such as Shandiz and Chali Dara Valley, and recreational centers such as Water Waves Land and Iram Amusement Park are among the must-see places in Mashhad. The city is also home to 10,000 historical sites. Only 1,500 of those sites have so far been registered and developed for tourists.
One of the major attractions of Mashhad is its restaurants and street eateries. Mashhad is the city of foods. It has numerous restaurants serving a variety of local and international foods. Mashhad also has more than 680 parks, providing a chance for visitors to entertain themselves besides their pilgrimage.
Mashhad is also a hotspot for health tourism in the region. Only in 2021, over 24,000 health tourists visited the city, mainly from Iraq and Oman, earning the city roughly $48 million. Authorities in Mashhad say the potentials are countless, but so are the challenges. To foreign visitors, Mashhad is still a religious-only city, and many are not aware of its recreational capacities.
We at the municipality are trying to raise awareness of the attractions in Mashhad. One of those efforts is the launching of the English version of our website, which guides foreign travelers through the city online. We will soon launch the Arabic webpage as well.
Due to the large number of visitors throughout the year, Mashhad has one of the best-equipped public transport systems in the country. It has a growing subway network and bus rapid transit system, beside other transportation services, making it easy to access the desired tourist destinations in the city.
Known as the spiritual capital of Iran, Mashhad seems to offer more than a spiritual experience to visitors. With its spectacular natural resorts and growing number of recreational centers, Mashhad municipality plans to turn the city into a tourist hub in the region. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Mashhad.
Yusuf Jalali,
Yet another wave of COVID-19 is hitting South Korea, with cases doubling to 40,000 per day in the past week. The BA.5 Omicron subvariant accounts for almost a third of the new cases, a portion that is increasing. While experts recognize vaccines may not always prevent infection, they decrease illnesses and deaths.
Even people who have been infected with Omicron before are not able to develop enough immunity to this variant unless they are vaccinated. People who have been fully vaccinated and boosted but become infected have reduced chances of severe illness of 70 to 90%.
The fatality rate of COVID-19 has dropped to near the seasonal flu. Still, experts argue the changed behaviors of mask wearing and routine vaccinations should remain in place. The recent spike in COVID-19 cases here comes as South Korea Thursday detects the first case of BA.2.75, nicknamed Centaurus. Scientists worry this highly mutated Omicron variant is even more transmissible than previous strains. Some want stronger antivirus enforcement, suggesting public apathy risks another COVID-induced economic downturn. People are required to wear masks on transit, but the government has said it will not implement lockdowns. People over 50 will be offered fourth vaccinations next week. Frank Smith, Seoul.
A debate in the European Parliament has heard that 22% of people in the EU are struggling to make ends meet. That's almost 100 million citizens who are counting every cent. Apparently, sending weapons to Ukraine is not the answer.
The best way to deal with the cost of living crisis is to stop prolonging the war. The people of Europe favour peace, even well above punishing Russia.
EU financial markets are in turmoil. There are calls for the introduction of a windfall tax.
Energy prices and food prices are going through the roof. Capitalists make profits by speculating on markets and thereby hurting millions of households.
Members of the public have been talking to us about the current state of the EU's economy.
It's terrifying to see that our free market is like collapsing. All the money that we are going to send to Ukraine, then we will have to need this money, and where we are going to take this money from.
The head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, has been singled out for criticism in the European Parliament.
We turn now about the increase of cost of living in the European Union, which is just a result of the insane and unsound policies promoted by the European Union since Ursula von der Leyen took office.
There have been calls for greater solidarity between EU member states to deal with the cost of living crisis.
In order to make sure that we are not at the end dividing Europe in those who are able to help and those who have more difficulties.
On sanctions against Russia, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban has said, quote, "Initially I thought that we had only shot ourselves in the foot, but now it is clear that the EU economy has shot itself in the lungs and is gasping for air." Many here agree. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Despite the UN-brokered truce, the consequences of the Saudi-led war are still taking the lives of Yemeni women and children. A recent report by the International Committee of the Red Cross says a mother and six newborns die every 2 hours in Yemen of complications that occur during pregnancy and causes that can be avoided in normal circumstances.
There is a severe shortage of medical supplies and medicines, as well as a significant increase in the prices of medicines, which has led to the deterioration of health services not only in the countryside, but even in main cities.
We as gynecologists have noticed a significant increase in the number of abortions, especially premature abortions in the early stages of pregnancy. Therefore, we hope to conduct studies that will reveal to us the reason and whether or not the prohibited weapons used by the Saudi-led coalition contributed to this tragedy.
The committee says the numbers are likely to increase due to a lack of health services or poor care provided, especially amid a shortage of funding for the United Nations programs in Yemen, as well as the termination of aid related to reproductive health and mother and child health. Recently, monks of the United Nations programs, including the World Food Program, announced the suspension of their humanitarian activities in Yemen due to a lack of funding, as well as the consequences of the Russia-Ukraine war.